Welcome to today's Retail Online Integration Webinar, The Seven Deadly Sins of Landing Page Design, sponsored by Trustee. Avarice, greed, sloth? No, the seven deadly sins of landing page design include sins such as unclear calls to action, offering visitors too many choices, and neglecting to create trust with them. Today, you'll have a great treat. You can hear Tim Ash, President and CEO of SiteTuners and author of Landing Page Optimization, discuss all seven landing page design sins and how to fix them. Trustees Andrea Stenzel will also discuss how to build trust on your mobile sites and social networking platforms. Before we get started, let me point out a few tips on how to make the most of today's live presentation. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the Help button at the bottom of the console or let us know via the Ask a Question box. Second, make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can see and take part in any interactive portions of today's presentation. To get a PDF version of the slide presentation for future reference, click on the Download Slides button on the console. If you're enjoying the webinar and would like to spread the word to your peers, you can send an email invitation directly from the console by clicking the Invite a Colleague button. You can also give us your feedback at any time during the hour by clicking the Survey button. The survey will also be distributed at the end of today's webinar. Today's speakers will be answering select questions live during the presentation. Use the Ask a Question feature on the console to submit your questions for consideration in advance at any time. We have a lot of folks listening in today, so we'll try to get as many questions answered as we can. But our speakers would be happy to answer some of the questions afterwards. If you leave the presentation at any time, you can access the entire webinar on demand for the next 90 days via the same audience link you used to watch the presentation today. After that, the webinar can be viewed from the Retail Online Integration website, www.retailonlineintegration.com/webinar. Finally, we encourage you to tweet about this webinar today. Please use hashtag ROIWebinar when doing so. Well, take it away, Tim.
Thanks very much, Melissa. Glad to be here. Thanks, everyone, for listening in. I'm going to do a pretty high-speed presentation. I'm going to go through this pretty quickly. So if you're a speed writer, you'll be able to look at webinar, #ROIWebinar. But all of the slides will be available, as Melissa mentioned. So let's kick it off. You're probably guessing from this title slide that it's not going to be your regular boring PowerPoint presentation. And that's true, except for this next slide. My vice president of sales said I had to put this one up. So just a little bit of background about us. We can do conversion reviews of individual pages or websites and best practices redesigns. We've done hundreds and hundreds of landing page tests. For our full service tests, we actually guarantee results and have worked with clients large and small, blah, blah, blah. And that's not what you're here to hear. I think what you're really here to hear is this. Your baby is ugly. Now, if we're in a live room right now, I'd have you raise your hand and repeat that because it's really important. Admitting you have a problem is the first step to recovery. So say it with me. I know it's kind of silly. You're on a webinar, but say it. Your baby is ugly. Say, my baby is ugly. And here are the different ways that your baby is ugly. I'm going to cover these seven deadly sins today in the webinar. And they're so common that we've been trying them as seven deadly sins because pretty much every website has at least a couple of these, every landing page. Unclear call to action, too many choices, asking for too much information, too much text, not keeping your promises, visual distractions, and last but not least, lack of trust. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to walk you at high speed through all of these and show you some examples. And then at the end, I'm going to show you kind of a real-world case study because, as I mentioned, in the wild, these problems are pretty common, and several of them can co-occur on your site. So we're going to do a little pop quiz to see if you're listening and see how many of the deadly sins you can spot in the example that I'll show you at the end. All right, here we go. The first seven of the seven deadly sins is an unclear call to action. And in case you're wondering, they are no particular order. These are all just one worse than the next. So, but let's look at these from the perspective of your visitor. What is it that you want somebody to do on a landing page? You know, this should be a question that they can easily answer. So let me ask you, what am I supposed to do on this page? And if you have an answer, go ahead and type it into the Q&A window. In fact, go ahead and do that throughout the webinar. What are you supposed to do here, folks? Okay, other than break open cold Corona beer and sit there on a in a hammock or something like that. But no, this is actually the Sandal World Catalog, and you have to click through this page to get to their homepage. And if you don't do that, 8 or 9 seconds in, it's going to flip for you and go to their homepage. But, you know, walk on the beach is not an answer. Or I mean, it is one of the answers that you guys gave. Buy sandals to wear on the beach was a great guess by Sherry, but, you know, it's just most people don't know what to do here. And I bet you this is costing 10 to 20% of sales right there, the so-called splash page. All right, let's try another one. This is a landing page for pay-per-click campaign. What are you supposed to do here? Go ahead and take a guess. Go ahead and enter in the Q&A window. And you guys care, and you're smart marketers. You're sitting here upgrading your knowledge by listening to me, hopefully. But what are you supposed to do? Look at this page. Call? No, it's not call. Leave a page? Find another website? Yeah, these are all good answers here. So let's see. What they actually want you to do, believe it or not, is click on the iPhone. Yes, folks, click on the iPhone. Of course, that's really obvious. It says free 30-day trial right there on that black iPhone. Isn't that obvious? Think about this whole page, all of the bright colors, the red banner that says call before December 30th, and then Vanna White there, that model pointing at the laptop, and then the screenshots of the reports, whatever this thing is. But no, among all of that clutter, the unclear call to action is to click on the phone. And by the way, it's not just small companies that mess this up. Big companies screw this up royally. Here's an example. That's about 3 years old because I used it as a screenshot in my book. But this is 1-800-Flowers, pretty big site, right? And this is their product detail page. Now, why is that important? Well, let me put it to you another way. This is a page that everybody has to pass through on the way to giving them money. If you want to check it out, you have to pass through the product detail page. And what is the call to action on this page? Again, go ahead and type it into the Q&A window. In other words, what specifically do they want you to do, or what part of the page do they want you to interact with? Somebody says sign in now. No, that's not it. What else? And it's not really obvious, is it? I mean, you'd think that on a product detail page, the call to action should be pretty clear. So I'll give you a hint. It's at the bottom of the page in the center column, that light violet, you know, select delivery dates button. Again, probably not the most obvious thing on the page. So as a design exercise, they asked us to come up with a page that had all of the same content and functionality but made the call to action clearer. So here's our design concept. Here's our mock-up. You ready? Here it is. Now tell me, what are you supposed to do on this page? Now, hopefully, it's pretty obvious. You're supposed to push the green button. Even before you get to read the green button, you know that you're supposed to click the green button. And the same information is here. In fact, we have a more attractive, bigger picture of the flowers and a clear action block to focus your attention within it, a single button. So one other way to illustrate this kind of unclear call to action is to show you what we call an attention wizard heat map. Now, this is software that you're welcome to try out that we offer that basically predicts where visual attention is going to go on a landing page. So here's the heat map for the original page. As you can see, there are these little hot spots on it, and that's what I want you to pay attention to. And just like cholesterol, there's good cholesterol and bad cholesterol. There's good attention and bad attention. In this case, the good attention is that giant hot spot on the bouquet of flowers. That's your hero shot. That's where you want attention to go. The bad news is all of the other hot spots on the page are on other interesting graphics. One is the second biggest hot spot is on the giant rose picture, just to let you know you're in the roses category in case you're really checked out. And then there's a picture of a florist and a banner ad at the top of the page, and all of this is competing for attention, and we're predicting that there's not going to be any initial attention on that poor green or light violet button that they actually say they want you to push at the end of the day. So here's the attention wizard heat map for the redesigned mock-up, and as you can see, there's lots of attention still on the bouquet, and boom, there's the biggest hotspots on the page is on that call to action. So write this down or tweet it at ROI webinar. It's got to be so simple that your mother-in-law would understand it. I love my mother-in-law dearly. Just kidding. But it's got to be simple. If it's not obvious, you're losing money. That's the standard you should be using, the obvious standard. If it's not obvious, you're losing money. All right. That was deadly sin number one. Let's move on. Too many choices. Now, again, this is all from the perspective of your visitor because they're the only ones that matter. What am I supposed to do first? Let me give you an example. Here's the homepage of Adorama. Now, they're a big photography superstore, if you will. And on this homepage, I know it's kind of hard to see because it's so tiny, but that's my whole point, is there are 146 clickable links. 146. So what are you supposed to do? Maybe click on one of the banner ads in the right-hand column, or one of the 12 featured items out of the probably 100,000 that they sell, or explore the nav bar with probably on the left-hand side, there's probably 50 entries on it. Or maybe it's below those top two ads near the top of the page, that big orange AARC one. There's a little link that says, How to Master Dog Photography by Bowser. Oh, yeah, I came there to this site to read that article. Good stuff, Maynard. Not going to happen. So let me show you by contrast another company in their space. This is more kind of high-end pro gear and stuff, but still, B&H Photo is very well respected, and this is a screenshot of their current homepage. Now, if I asked you, do they sell plasma TVs? I bet just by glancing at that page, you could answer it. Do they sell cameras? Do they sell laptops? And you're probably going, yes, yes, it's obvious. And that's my point. They've taken their all of the clutter and reduced it down to a 4x3 grid of categories. And you can tell their categories because they have little category images, not just a single item, but a representative range of things in that category. So if I'm there looking for digital cameras, I can just focus on the picture of the camera and ignore the rest of the page, and then underneath it see the subcategories that I might be interested in. So the primary purpose of a homepage like this should be navigation and to help get me off the homepage. But unfortunately, we have too many choices, so we're actually paralyzed by the amount of information on those pages. All right, let's talk about deadly sin number three, asking for too much information. Now, this is very, very common. And the equivalent of it is just asking for inappropriate information too early in a process or a relationship. Imagine if you were to walk into a store and somebody greeted you at the door and said, Hi, welcome to our shop. Can I hold your credit card while you shop? Would that be okay with you? And yet, as marketers, we do the same thing. We're greedy marketers. And I put myself in that category. I really have to fight that impulse. So we want to know information, even if we're not going to do anything with it. Now, here's an example. It's one of our clients, Hearing Planet, and they had this landing page, and they had this for it's to help you buy hearing aids. And they had this great bribe, Seth Godin in Permission Marketing says, you know, you have to have a good bribe. What you're asking for, what you take has to be a lot less than what you give. So they have this great ebook, A Buyer's Guide to Hearing Aids. Download it now. This is great, right? Except look at the form and look at what they're asking for in the form. And they ask for your name, first and last. That's fine. But then they ask for state, city, zip, street address. What's going on here? This is a downloadable ebook, folks. Now, I want you to write down a quick answer to this question. What is the minimum of information you need to ask for when you have somebody download something off of your site? Go ahead. Type it into the Q&A window. What is the minimum amount of information that you need? And you certainly don't need the street address, because what are you going to do, mail them something? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. It's a downloadable ebook, folks. Okay, so what's the minimum you need? If you said email address, the name, you're wrong. That's what most of us would say. And you know what I would say to you if you said that? You're still being a greedy marketer. You can't be a greedy marketer. The actual minimum amount of information you need to let me download something is exactly nothing. That's right, nothing. Dave Cunningham got it right. Because it's a download. Let me have the ebook. You haven't lost anything by that except the feeling of control. Maybe it's better to get it into more hands. What about your healthcare provider, your insurance company, your caregivers, the children of the aging parents that are getting the hearing aid? It'd be so much better to have that nicely formatted thought leadership piece in their hands and being passed around. And when they're ready to come back and take that next step of signing up for a hearing exam, you have a link in there and you can track it. And you know exactly when they downloaded the ebook and what the delay from that time to the hearing appointment was. All of that information is still yours. And then you can ask for their name and address because you're going to need to find the closest provider of hearing tests for them. See, so don't be a greedy marketer. You want to make 17% more money? At a minimum, go take off the mailing address. That's what we did in this test. Now, again, our client insisted that they needed all this other information, except I think a change in business strategies called for. But removing the street address was a 17% lift. Okay, let's take a look at another example. Now, this is a lead form for debt negotiation. You know, if you have too much debt, this company will help you negotiate it down to a smaller amount with your credit card companies. Actually, no, they'll sell your lead to a company that will do that. So they have this big imposing form on the right. It asks for, you know, your name, your spouse's name, your last name, email, work phone, cell phone, home phone, best time to call. I mean, it's just ridiculous what's in that red part of the form. So we asked them, what do you do with this information? And their answer was, we call them. We pick up the phone and call everybody that fills out the form because we sell these leads off, and if we're selling crap leads, nobody's going to want to buy from us after a while. So what we do is we qualify them. We said, okay, that's great. Now, what is the minimum of information that you need to know whether it's worth calling me to qualify me? And that's what ended up actually on the winning page in this test. Look at the form. First, last, email, phone, those are contact methods, state, because they have different laws, and amount of debt. In other words, if you don't have enough debt, we don't even want to talk to you. That's it. And you see how much less imposing that form is? Now, it's true. I know some of you are going to probably saying, look, everything on the page changed. Well, that's true. It was a multivariate test. We changed a lot of things at the same time. But I bet you dollars to donuts that reducing the length of that form was the key to that 51% increase that you're seeing. And that was across the boards for form fills online and call-ins to their 800 number. $48 million a year more, this one landing page. Just ask for less information. All right. Another favorite of mine, or Seven Deadly Sin all-star, is too much text. Now, you probably thought that text was good, right? But on the web, that's not true. Now, take a look at this page for Canyon Tours. Believe it or not, this is actually a pay-per-click landing page for Google AdWords. They're paying to drive traffic to this page. It's their homepage of their site. And it's awful. It says, Canyon Tours offers 180 different modes of transportation over the Grand Canyon, buses, helicopters, donkeys, I don't know, whatever. The point is, there's too much text. Do you remember the old Charlie Brown cartoons where the kids were in school and the grown-up or teacher was talking at the front of the room? All the kids heard was this trombone sound, wah, 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 wah. Well, this is the web equivalent of that. When you write in complete sentences and paragraphs, you're guaranteed to be ignored. So your seventh grade grammar teacher may be proud of you, but you're losing a bunch of money. So don't do that. Here's another example. A very, very text-heavy page. Now, you can say, this is for rack-mounted servers, and that's true. That's a pretty geeky kind of topic, but still, let me tell you as a recovering technologist myself that even geeks don't like to have their time wasted. So don't write text like this. Bullet points, headings, subheadings, links for people to follow to additional information. Don't bury them in text. All right, let's move on. I want to talk next about a more subtle deadly sin, and that is not keeping your promises. Now, I'm sure when you grew up, your mom or somebody told you to keep your promises, and you know, it's generally a good thing, right? But again, because we're greedy marketers, we don't like to keep our promises. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, actually, it might not be greed. It might be ignorance, or it might be siloing. It might be just the simple fact that the people that drive the traffic to the site aren't the same ones that built the landing page. So it's kind of like, okay, here's your traffic. I'm dropping it off at the curb. Now you have to haul it into the house and set it up. That's your problem, not mine. I did my job. Here's your traffic. So what's really actually important is to make sure that there's a connection between the intent of the people upstream and where they came from and what happens on your site or landing page. In other words, you have to consider context. The number one driver of conversion, folks, more than low price in e-commerce or anything else that you might have heard, number one driver of conversion is matching people's intent. That's right, matching what they intended to do when they came to your page. Now, let me show you how not to do this. Now, let's say I was on Google and I Googled best digital camera. And I got this page, and one of the search results page had this pay-per-click ad on it, best digital camera. Let's deconstruct this for a second. Best digital camera. Great, that's what I typed in. That's exactly what I'm looking for. Then it says, get expert reviews of top digital cameras from Consumer Reports. Now think about that. Would this be helpful for me if I was trying to find the best digital camera to get expert reviews? Sure, that'd be great. Consumer Reports is a really well-trusted consumer watchdog or reporting group. They rate everything from refrigerators to cars to cameras, right? Okay, I trust them. So think about it. What is my expectation? Is it high or is it low? It's really, really high. I have a lot of faith in these folks. And what's my intent? What do I expect to get on the next page? I expect to get reviews, expert reviews. Now, let's see. Here's the page that I land on. Now, at the top, it says top-rated digital cameras. Good. Okay, great. Over 56 models tested. Up in the upper right, they have several of the top brands that I'm looking at. Perfect. Oops. But then there's a big red button in the middle of the page that says join today. Yes, join today. Now, what are they really asking me to do? What do they mean by join today? Go ahead and type this into your the Q&A window. What is the actual conversion action that these greedy marketers want from me? They actually want me to crack open my wallet. They want me to subscribe. They want me to – the only way I'm going to get those reviews that they promised is to pay them money. Wow, that's like running into a brick wall at 60 miles an hour. My expectation and my intent was to get expert reviews. That's what they promised me. Let's go back. There we are on Google, and we're looking at for best digital cameras. That's what they promised me, and that's what I was expecting, and they lied to me. And here I am telling hundreds of people on this webinar, and I've told tens of thousands over the years, that Consumer Reports are liars. Now, is that the kind of brand fallout you want, or just more importantly, is that the kind of experience you want when someone is interacting with you? Join today. You might as well have written on that button, don't give me a cent of your money or ever, or run away or go back now, because that's the effect it's having. And it's all because you didn't keep your promises. Now, how could we have done that? Well, you can show me a sample review. Show me one of your least popular camera. I mean, whatever, the XYZ 5000, I'm not buying Nikon or Canon, but you can at least show me what a review looks like, even for kind of a no-name camera. Or you can show me last year's reviews of last year's brands, just to show me how comprehensive they are. Or you can actually give me a list of the 56 models that you say you've tested. Then I can see if the one I'm interested in is there. So there's a lot of things it could have done to kind of soft land me instead of crash landing me on this page. All right, let's move on. I want to talk next about visual distractions. Now, this is a personal favorite of mine. I happen to be an artist and a photographer, and I love my art. But I don't love graphic designers that dress up landing pages, because all they do is just clutter them up. Let me show you an example. Barbells, anyone? Would you buy from this site? Let's type it into the Q&A window. What's your chances of buying from this site? zero. Because it's just a visual assault on the senses. Here you are in New York Barbells. By the way, you're not seeing the full glory of this because some of the text there in yellow and red blinks. It blinks in reverse color every couple of seconds. Wonderful stuff. And think about it. This is the visual equivalent of having somebody shoot an Uzi submachine gun at your face at point-blank range. Most of you are probably running for cover and heading for the exits, or at least hitting the back button so you don't get sprayed by the Uzi, right? By the way, I was ragging on graphic designers a little. I'm sorry if I offended anyone. I would normally go on about that a bit, but look, obviously no graphic designers were involved in the construction of this page. I mean, this is just an awful homebrewed piece of crap. But the point is, it's visually distracting. And there's lots of other kinds of visual distractions. One of the worst is motion. Here's an example. I landed on this landing page. Soon as I got there, I got that cute little pop-up window with the smiling model. And the question was, is Jane says, hello, how may I help you? And, you know, my answer is by this point, I'm sure, it was, go away, Jane, right? Except I tried to make that happen. There was a tiny little X, no thanks, in the lower border of that window. But unfortunately, that chat window started at the left edge of my screen and then moved very rapidly to the right. And then when it got to the right-hand side of the screen, it bounced and went back to the left again. And I was chasing it across the screen, and I couldn't click on that tiny little X fast enough. It was like some kind of video game or something. It's ridiculous. Now, think about that. Think about this as a visual distraction. I just got to the page. I haven't even looked at it. And then a pop-up comes up, says, can I help you? I don't know if you can help me. I haven't read the page yet. And by the way, what I'm not saying is that you can't have two distinct goals on a website or a landing page. You can. You could have big, important goal number one, gets most of the real estate and most of the visual emphasis. Fine. Less important goal number two or three is off to the side and less visually prominent. In fact, if I wanted to chat, look at the bottom of the page underneath that chat window. It's got the little chat lady there with the boom mic and her hair pulled back in a bun. Boy, if I had a nickel for every time I saw the chat lady like that, I'd be retired. I probably wouldn't be doing this webinar right now. The point is, it's already there on the page. In fact, I think it's still getting way too much visual prominence with that picture in the lower left-hand corner. You didn't need to interrupt me on the way in. And when you have something that interrupts me, that I have to react to, that's got motion associated with it, and this extends to banner ads that rotate or slide or fade or whatever they do, that's just bad planning on your part because you're trying to cram too many messages into your page. But the visual distraction, the eye, is always going to get reset and really influenced by motion. So if your call to action isn't animated and something else on your page is, that's probably not a good idea. So get rid of visual embellishments, motion, things like that as much as you can. Really cut it back. I know, again, to all of the creative types in the audience, sounds really boring, but you know what? Boring rings the cash register. Boring gets more form fills. Think of it this way. You have to have a zen-like approach. Your page should have a zen-like stillness, and your call to action should naturally arise out of that quiet. It should not be a Turkish bazaar where everybody's competing to get you into their stall. It's like, hey, you know, you want to buy a camel, you want to buy a carpet, you want to buy my sister, you know, come in here. You know, it shouldn't, when you get to your landing page, it should be a bullshit-free zone. It should be still and quiet. And then out of that relative stillness, you can have a much more subtle call to action arise. So that's my kind of moment of Zen clarity for you. All right. One more deadly sin before we go on to our example. Lack of trust. Now, I know that Andreas is probably going to have a word or two to say about this, of course, being with a company like Trustee, but we consider this as absolutely critical to the success of any landing page. Now, they don't have a lot of time to evaluate you when somebody comes to a landing page. Did you know that a first impression of a landing page is formed in a 20th of a second? That's right, a 20th of a second. And here's the worst part for most of you. That first impression will carry over to the likelihood of them converting on your page. In other words, you can't fake it. It's subliminal. It's instantaneous. And we know a bad page when we see it. We know a cheesy versus a professional page. For example, let me ask you a quick question. Anybody want to buy a grand piano? Grand pianos, anyone? Yes, you could buy them right off this site. And you know why? Because it has black and white text and a link in the text in the middle that says only 1 mile from the I-95 on the Capitol Beltway. Here's the funny part. I bet you Rick Jones Pianos, which this was a pay-per-click ad on Google. If you type in grand piano right now, you're probably going to have Rick Jones Pianos come up in one of the paid spots, probably spending six figures a month to run traffic to this page. And they've been doing it for years, folks. And you know what? They have a great instruction in the upper right, by the way. It says, press Control D to bookmark this page. Yeah, just in case you really, really want to come back here after looking at it. And they have two home buttons. Wait, I just noticed that. Upper left and upper right in red. Okay. Anyway, these people have no credibility because they have no trust because their first impression they make is completely unprofessional. This site looks like it was developed circa 1995 and not updated since. So are you kidding me? Would I part with $25,000 of my hard-earned dollars to buy a piano from you? The fact is they're really established. They've been around for 25 years. They're one of the top sellers of pianos in the Washington, D.C., Baltimore area. But you'd never know it from this site, and you wouldn't trust them because you're going to judge the book by its cover. So one form of trust is appearance. Make sure that you're up to professional standards. Another important form of trust are assurances and trust marks, like Trustee, for example, or McAfee Secure for e-commerce, or any number of other ones. Just having the Visa and MasterCard logo on your site if you're e-commerce, or We Ship by UPS, or Better Business Bureau. You see at the bottom of this page, I've highlighted, there's some great trust marks, except for one problem. They're at the bottom of the page. Now, more people are used to scrolling these days, but nevertheless, that means that only probably about 15% of people are going to see those trust marks. And you're paying for many of those. So think about it. If they're important, why are you hiding them and burying them near the footer of your page? It just makes no sense. Now, I'm not saying to take that whole colorful ribbon and to just ram it into your header. That would be kind of overkill as well. But you should definitely take a couple of your key ones and promote them to above the visual fold so people can see them without scrolling. That's really, really important. So second pillar of trust is transactional trust marks and assurances. All right, let me talk about a third pillar of trust, and that is the behavior of your peers. Peer pressure, social proof. If you see a lot of people just like you doing things, then you're going to be more likely to do them. It's just our normal herd behavior, right? So I was downloading about a year ago this latest version of Mozilla and the Firefox browser. And this was about 6 weeks after it came out, and I got to this page, and it said something amazing to me, 543,943,166 downloads, big numeral. In 6 weeks, half a billion downloads of this browser. Now, if I had any thoughts or qualms about downloading the browser, I think they would pretty much be assuaged by them. So use numbers going back to all time. How many customers, how many downloads, how many free trials, how many visitors to your site, whatever is the appropriate metric. But come up with a huge number that says, I'm not alone and I'm not going to be the guinea pig that's going to suffer for trying you out first. But then they did something even more diabolically compelling, which is they have this world map, and on it they had little orange dots that would light up every time somebody downloaded a browser, this browser somewhere around the world. And I happened to be in Germany at the time, so you can see it. Central Europe is completely lit up, and it was just like, and then I got more of my social proof. Look, people all around me are downloading, and not just lots of people, but they're here right now in the same place I am, and they're doing it. So a couple of keys to properly using social proof, use large numbers and use likeness. Make sure that people are similar to me as possible. Here's a quick example. I was on Pandora, the internet radio station, and I'm listening to Lenny Kravitz tune, and all of a sudden, because I customized it with Facebook, they personalized the page for me. Said, hey, one of your Facebook friends likes this artist. And think about it, what's the conversion action on this page? Well, it's either to vote thumbs down or up for the song, which improves their recommendation engine, or it's to actually buy the track for $1.99. I'm more likely to do both if I have warm and fuzzies and I'm doing it in the context of my social network and people just like me. So it's a really, really powerful way to influence people if you can pull in reviews, testimonials, other things from social network. There's a, you can do this very, very simple data feed from Facebook, for example. If somebody likes your page, you can actually pull in information from their profile, and if you need to, you can customize or personalize the page for them. Huge dividends on that. I mean, several 100% conversion improvement is what we've seen at times. Okay, one final pillar of trust before I go on to my more comprehensive example and wrap it up. Here's authority and trust in the form of third-party endorsements. Appeals to authority. So here's a real age test. Now, for those of you not familiar, it's this online quiz where you tell them about your lifestyle and they calculate your quote-unquote real age based on how well you've maintained your body. Now, we tried the before. This is the after from the test we did, and it has all of the media mentions that they've appeared in. So if you're talking about asking for personal information, do you smoke, do you do drugs, do you exercise, well, look, CNN reviewed these guys, 2020, USA Today, New York Times. When you see these huge media brands on there, it makes you trust me more or trust this site more. And here's an example from business-to-business context. SF Videos, huge DVD duplication and Blu-ray duplication house worldwide. They do large-scale jobs. This was their pay-per-click form, instant quote. You can see that's on the left. On the right side was a giant list of their some of their clients. And it matters, folks. We cut that list down to just six, and it dropped conversion rate. I mean, it dropped it from the 58% gain that we saw with this big list. So more is better. I'm sure the talk track in your head, if you're looking for DVD duplication, when you get to this page, goes something like this. Wow, they work with Walmart, Nike, and ABC, and AT&T. I hope they'll take my little itty-bitty duplication job. Because, folks, is there any question that they could handle your job? No. That's all gone out the window by putting up a few client logos. Now, they don't necessarily need to dominate the visual conversation like we have them do here. They could be subtle. On our own homepage, we use grayscale client logos in a right column for lower contrast. But the point is, use trust, and use trust liberally. Third-party advocation of you, media mentions, client logos to instill that trust. All right, I have one quick example for you of this in the real world. This is one of our clients, Credo Mobile. They're Bay Area-based, socially conscious cell phone company, which I guess is a bit redundant. But anyway, this is a landing page that they used for their in-house email list. Switch to our phone and get this deal. And now most of you would think it's a pretty professional page, but I'm telling you right now that there are four deadly sins on this page. Now take a quick look at it and type them into the Q&A window. Type in all four if you can spot them. Go ahead, don't be shy. Like I said, there would be a quiz. Seven deadly sins, in case you're wondering, are unclear call to action, too much text, visual clutter, not keeping your promises, not enough trust, and too many choices. All right, I'm going to give you a minute to type those in. Might be something for the winner. Yeah, you know what? I think the person that gets the most right is going to get a copy of my book, so we'll do that later. All right. Let's start at the top. This page has too much text. You see that lower right light gray area? It's got a paragraph of text. Guaranteed, none of you just read that. All right, what about visual clutter? The site's very, very annoying and bright. It's got swaths of giant orange. It has a dark charcoal gray background. Lack of trust is another one. You know that you don't. Who are these people? Most of you on this call probably never heard of Credo Mobile, right? And then finally, what is it? It is visual distractions I talked about. Sorry, I didn't put it on the wrong slide here. Too much text, unclear call to action. Now, most of you would argue with that last one, say, what do you mean unclear call to action? I mean, it's pretty simple. It's pretty obvious. What they had on that page was a big, fat green button. How could you have missed it? You know, and I would say, you know, I did miss it. And most of your audience will, too, amid all of that other visual clutter. Let me show you why I say that. Here's the attention wizard heat map for that page. By the way, this can be used with just a mock-up, not necessarily even a live page. But so we ran their page through it. You see the hotspots on the page? They're in blank areas. The two big hotspots on the left that are just formed by the corners of the highly contrasting color blocks. And there's some on the phone and somewhere you want it on the headline, but there's very little on that green button in the middle of the page because orange is a much more dominant color. It's much more visually striking. So we corrected all of the deadly sins for them. We worked with them to actually come up with this design. And again, if you're a graphic designer, you're probably going, oh, gee, this is really boring. It's just a more boring version of the old page, right? Not any better. But look at what we did. We addressed all of the four deadly sins. There is now a clear call to action, that orange button, and I'll show you that in a second. There aren't any visual distractions because we toned down the periphery of the page. We added trust in the form of logos on the right for Greenpeace and Planned Parenthood and Doctors Without Borders and all of the organizations that they give money to. And we made we cut down the text quite a bit and basically reduced it to one list of bullet points. Now, here's the attention wizard heat map for the redesign page. As you can see, the good attention's on the hero shot and on the call to action, and then we very intentionally calibrated it by playing with the contrast and size of it to get you to the top of that list of trust symbols in the form of the charities they give money to. So anybody want to take a quick guess? And if you've seen this before, please don't play. What percentage improvement do you think this new page had over the old one? Just going to do a quick pause here, and we're almost done. So type in your answer into the Q&A. What percentage? Oh, I think, Kevin, I think you've probably seen this presentation before. Kevin guessed. Anybody else? All right, well, we're going to give you a few more seconds here. Just type in a number. All right, but I'm going to give you the answer right now. And the answer is, Kevin, you're over by 1 percentage point. It's not 85%, it's 84%. But I think we should still give it to Kevin. That was pretty close. All right, 84%. Folks, this is not heavy lifting. This is not rocket surgery, as Steve Krug would say. It's simple. We did an inventory of the seven deadly sins. We found four. We got rid of them. All right, so just to recap, what are the seven deadly sins? Unclear call to action, too many choices, asking for too much information too early in the process, too much text, not keeping your promises, visual distractions, lack of trust. These are where it should be really easy to spot. So, okay, you may have had a good laugh at the expense of some of the examples I used, but I'm telling you, it's all fun and games until somebody loses an eye. Go back to your own website or landing pages, look at it without the rose-colored glasses, and find those ugly babies. They're everywhere. These sins are very common. I guarantee you, you have some on your site. Now, if you're interested in a kind of more structured walkthrough of your landing page, I want to extend a special offer to everyone. We can do via an online meeting and record an interactive walkthrough of your landing page to find many of these problems and actually some more. You can just go to express-review.com and sign up. And here's the incentive or disincentive, depending on your opinion of my webinar to date, but I will do the first three personally. So when you check out with Google Checkout in the comment field, just put ROI webinar Tim Ash, and I will do it myself. So here's some of my contact information. If you want to get in touch with me, I'm pretty reachable. We'll, again, have all of this in the slide deck. And at this point, I want to thank the folks that put on this webinar and sponsored it and throw it over to Andreas from Trustee.
Thanks so much, Tim. Those were great insights. I learned a bunch myself, and I hope everybody else did too. We're going to do a little deep dive into the trust building section of Tim's presentation, and I'll go ahead and start with a little bit about Trustee. Our name speaks trust. We've been building trust online for over 14 years now with our privacy programs and services. Along the way, we've picked up over 4,000 customers globally, many of whom you see here in a wide variety of industries. And looking through the attendee list, I see many of you from our client companies joining today. So thanks for your interest and support. One interesting thing to note is when we sign up companies like these large brands or smaller brands that aren't on this list, These companies will typically put the trustee seal on their site, whether it's on the home page or the bottom of every page or whatever, they put this logo on, and we have over 1 million people from these client sites, their users, customers, visitors, that actually click on our trustee logo to kind of verify or double check that that client is actually doing what they're saying they're going to do with the customer and user privacy. It's very interesting. So these people aren't just seeing the logo, they're actually double checking, over a million of them a month. So I'll go ahead now to the next slide here. Online privacy risks are rapidly evolving. There's almost some evolution of privacy risk at every customer-facing front, and it's all been evolving in the last 6 months to 12 months. So we have the FTC asking industries to self-regulate here in North America. The government more broadly is proposing privacy regulation on numerous fronts. There are a number of Congress people proposing legislation at the federal level alone. Consumers and press are very vocal about privacy here in the U.S. and North America, and we have browsers, all the large players jumping into the game, building in a variety of privacy functions into their systems. These are just the largest browsers in the market, and there's a long tail of many, many more. So in the U.S. today, in the European markets today, and globally tomorrow, we're going to help you stay in front of these kind of developments to protect your business and brand. Here's a little bit about how it works. Okay. We're here to help you do smarter, more strategic privacy practice in your organization. A couple bullets about what we do. We're proactive. We help mitigate risk so that problems don't arise, whether it's problems with your website, consumer complaints, or even worse, something hits the press about your business or hits large-scale audiences. We're here to ensure compliance. We work with privacy, risk, and compliance folks in businesses to stay ahead of any problems that are arising. And just like I noted a moment ago, there are things that are still developing. We make sure your compliance and risk folks know about those things before they happen. The end result is we try to protect and build brand affinity to keep your brand strong and safe. And we do this on a number of fronts, advertising, mobile, cloud, and websites. We'll get into that more in a moment. Okay, we offer a pretty comprehensive set of services. We have custom consulting, packaged services, and both preemptive and reactive advisory services for a wide variety of things, for website performance, data management, and regulatory investigations. We offer software that kind of scans websites for risk domestically and globally. We monitor privacy and security scanning and protect your brand from simple mishaps. And it can be as simple as something like there's no SSL on one of your store pages for some reason. That's automatically detected. It's tough to do manually. All the way to more sophisticated things like weak password and encryption practices that make your site more easily hackable. We find those things and let you know about them before problems arise. And our services are scalable and flexible. We augment legal and compliance teams with true privacy experts in this kind of rapidly evolving, incredibly complex privacy landscape. And we have annual terms that are pretty straightforward there. Okay, so more deeply, we offer online privacy solutions for all the major customer-facing channels, including advertising, where we certify against DAA and OBA compliance. If you're in the ad space, you know about this very well. We have data collection for data aggregators, retargeters, and profile builders as well. In the mobile front, we have mobile site and mobile app certification. If you're just making the apps, this has been wildly successful for us, and so reach out to us if you're interested in more information on that. We protect cloud platforms and sites with downloadable products, and we, of course, offer our website privacy protection, our traditional product that helps with privacy protection and our uplift and conversion products as well. So jumping into the trust building best practices section here. The page is loading slowly for me. So here it is, the marketing levers that matter. As Tim spoke to very well, it's key to invest into the lower funnel first and then work your way back up by certifying thousands of clients, many of whom are buying our products for the uplift or increase in conversion. We see this time and time again. You're spending so much money advertising with search engines, with display advertising, driving email blasts into your site, that it's best to just work backwards from your store, optimize your cart experience first, from your landing page, as Tim spoke to very well today, and then work backwards up and then optimize your larger marketing budgets. And then consider the investment it takes, the time and money it takes to tune up your store or your landing pages, and then look back at the amount of investment you make in driving traffic into it. You'll find it's typically a small fraction to work on your landing pages, store flows, or web design compared to the advertising spend you may push into it. Okay. So here's one of two slides on trust building best practices. This is from kind of a privacy and information management standpoint. And you want to have industry-leading preference practices. So build out a preference center. It's a kind of a one-stop shop for managing settings for user privacy, for communications like signing up for email newsletters and things, sharing access, and even location tracking. This isn't just for email anymore. You can put in, you know, sales rep phone call practices as well for B2B folks out there. You want to make this easy to find. It should be at the bottom of most pages or certainly at the bottom of emails. And try to drive this as an opt-up and opt-down mechanism versus an opt-out. While we're legally required to put in an opt-out, try to flow folks to a preference center where they can choose what they really want to see. And you'll see very quickly people will shy away from or opt into things that you offer that will tell you what people are truly interested in from you. And as Tim spoke to, keep your promises. If you opt people in, opt people out, or tell them you're going to do something, or tell them you're not going to do something, definitely do it and follow up appropriately. And another one here, we want to have industry-leading privacy practices. So have a privacy strategy in place in your organization. This is something that's very timely these days. Not a day or two goes by without something hitting the news. So have a strategy in place. Be comprehensive about it. It's not just for your privacy policy on your website. If you're doing something on mobile with display advertising or with apps, consider those too. Be proactive and stay ahead of problems. And again, make things easy to use, active, and well communicated so that your users see it and understand it and can engage with it if they'd like to. Okay? So with Trustee, we've had thousands of companies succeed. More on the conversion and uplift side. For marketing, I have a couple examples. We help people help organizations increase lift for newsletter registrations, like the Cheap Flights example, for application conversions like Elon did, and Deelix, a large network of auto sites, had an increase in not just lead quantity, but the quality lead conversion as well. On the sales side with e-commerce sites, the Pros, a large e-commerce services company, had an 80% increase in purchases, a 70% increase in RPV, or revenue per visit, and when you add those two together, there's quite an impressive multiplier. So they're selling more and more often. Devin Rue, an increase in sales of almost 30% in Bud Shop, Budweiser's web store, a nice 5% increase. So we help through this kind of third-party credibility that Tim spoke to, help sales increase for small brands and large ones. And with that, we'll jump into Q&A. Thank you very much. There's more info if you'd like to contact Tim and I, and now we'll start to take questions.
Great. Thanks, everyone, for a great presentation. I suspected there's a ton of questions here, so I'm going to just sort of ask three or four, and Tim and Andreas will get to as many as they can offline, if that's okay. One question that one of the sins, I guess, deadly sins that seems to have gotten a lot of questions around is the idea of text, whether you should use little text, a lot of more text. One of our listeners was interested in how to reconcile the idea of trying to have the Google crawlers pick up your site content. So therefore, they usually want to have lots of text. Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So there you have to please two masters, human beings and Google's website crawler. You know, so you can put the text on the page, the necessary 350 to 400 words, thematically correct, anchor text link, but you can do it below the user experience. You can construct the human being experience largely out of graphics if you need to minimize the amount of text so that SEO text is the first text that the spiders see, but there's still a good user experience at the top of the page. On our own homepage, sitetuners.com, we have a basic graphical choice at the top, and all of our SEO text is buried below the end of the page. So that's one way to deal with it. By the way, a quick shout out to Annie. I love graphic designers like you that do clear designs. I don't hate graphic designers. I just hate people that clutter up pages.
Okay, another person was wondering, I thought this was kind of an interesting question. If you have a landing page, if you're just doing a simple landing page, should the landing page just focus on the one product that you're trying to sell, or should you also include other products on there?
If you're talking about e-commerce, if it's a related upsell, that's perfectly acceptable. The two ways to present that is off to the side, and here you might also be interested in this kind of column, or on the next page, and more of a, would you like fries with that? After they've already cracked their wallet open, it's a lot easier to get people to buy additional stuff. So, by the way, when I talk about landing pages, that can be any page on your site where traffic is landing on the way to an important conversion goal. So really the whole path from where they land to where the conversion happens is ripe for optimization. It's not just about standalone pages. Often your home page is your most important landing page.
Right. What's a good number of clickable links that you should have on a page? Is there a number you should try to not go over?
No. I mean, it depends on how you segregate them. In menus, you should have relatively short lists, no more than 6 or 7, because people can't keep that in short-term memory any more than that. If it's text and it's sprinkled throughout, the links are okay. You could have 3, 4, 5 links in the text of a page. But it's also how you visually emphasize. You might make the primary call to action a button and other things text links that are bolded, and yet others small text links that are not bolded. So you can help me visually prioritize what's important to click on or look at.
This sounds like it could be sort of the holy grail, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Once you get someone to click on your call to action, how do you get them to go onto your site to learn more information?
Not sure I understood that exactly. If you're off-site, we're really picking it up most of the time when they're on the landing page already. So.
Right. How about this? I'm just going to ask this question. Can you mention any landing pages that you thought were great that you've seen recently? Because I know, or brands perhaps that, you find to be real stellar?
I like this kind of clean Web 3.0 look. A lot of individual service companies do this. Well, for example, Skype, I think, has a pretty nice homepage. It's clean, it's inviting, doesn't look cluttered. By the way, somebody busted me and said, your own attention wizard site has several of the deadly sins. True enough, guilty as charged, as they say, shoemaker's children always go barefoot. We're working on a redesign of HD. but thanks for keeping me honest. By the way, other people had questions about Attention Wizard, if you could try it free. You can't try it free, but you could try it for a penny. You can get 10 heat maps if you go try it for a penny. So hopefully that's not going to bust your budget.
Yeah, and just wrapping it up, a lot of people asked for your web address again, your URL.
Oh, it's just sitetuners.com. My email address is tim@sitetuners.com. And by the way, Brian Daugherty, you won the book, so buddy, reach out to me on that email, tim@sitetuners.com, and we'll get you an autographed book.
Great. Well, I think we're going to have to wrap it up about now, but I would just love to thank, first of all, Tim and Andreas for a wonderful presentation. Tim, you always have such great insight. I feel like I learn something every time I listen to you. And I also would love to thank our sponsor, Trustee, as well as all the audience members who listened in and asked a lot of great questions. So we're going to end the presentation right now, and thank you all so much for coming. If you'd like to download the presentation, it will be on Retail Online Integration. Website, retailonlineintegration.com, for the next 90 days. So check it out there, and thanks so much.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for having us.